6. Monitoring and controlling intensity. The 80-20 rule governs running intensity, which we can define simply as how hard the body is working during a run relative to how hard it is capable of working. To practice 80-20 running effectively, you need to actively monitor and control your intensity throughout every run. Trying to maintain the right balance of training intensities without paying attention to how hard you're working during your runs would be like trying to balance a household budget without paying attention to income or expenditures. There are lots of ways to measure intensity, none of them perfect. For example, exercise scientists commonly use oxygen consumption as an indicator of exercise intensity. But oxygen consumption peaks at running speeds that are well below maximal, so it can't be used to quantify intensity at very high speeds. Beyond that, it's impractical. The required equipment costs a fortune and weighs a ton. Other measures of exercise intensity, including blood lactate concentration, have different kinds of limitations that confine their use to the laboratory. The three most practical measures of running intensity are perceived effort, heart rate, and pace. Each has its own set of advantages and weaknesses. You will get the best possible results from your 80-20 training if you use all three of them complementarily. In this chapter, I will give you concrete guidelines for monitoring and controlling your running intensity by perceived effort, heart rate, and pace, both individually and in combination. Perceived effort. Perceived effort is nothing more than how hard you feel you're working during a run. This feeling is distinct from other perceptions you experience when running, such as a burning sensation in your windpipe or soreness in your calf muscles. When you're working very hard in the middle of a run, you can sense it even if your windpipe is not burning and there is no pain in your calf muscles. In fact, numbing the legs with anesthesia has no effect on perceived effort. The reason is that perceived effort is literally all in your head. Studies have demonstrated that effort perception is mainly a function of how hard the brain is working to drive the muscles. In other words, it is the brain's perception of its own effort, not the body's. The harder the brain is driving the muscles, the more intense the effort feels. Scientists use a measurement called movement-related cortical potential, MRCP, to quantify how hard the brain is driving the muscles during exercise. A study led by Samuele Marcora at the University of Kent found that both MRCP and subjective ratings of effort were proportionally greater in subjects when they lifted a heavy weight than when they lifted a light weight. This is exactly what we would expect to see if brain activity determined perception of effort. The same study found that MRCP and perceived effort were just as high when subjects lifted a lightweight with a tired arm as when they lifted a heavyweight with an arm that wasn't tired. Runners can certainly relate to this second finding. If you start running at a full sprint, you will experience a high level of effort immediately, before you get tired. That's because your brain has to drive your muscles very hard when you run fast. On the other hand, when you run slowly, your sense of effort is low initially, but then it increases gradually as you keep going. That's because your brain has to work harder and harder to drive the muscles as they become fatigued. What's more, as we heard in the preceding chapter, the brain itself becomes fatigued during prolonged low-intensity exercise, so that actual stimulation of the muscles by the brain decreases even though the brain is trying harder to keep the body moving. What all of this means to you is that the relationship between perceived effort and intensity is not a pure one, but is corrupted by fatigue. The effect of fatigue on perceived effort has important practical implications for the use of this metric to monitor and control running intensity. If you do a long run at a steady pace, your intensity, by definition, will also remain steady, but your perceived effort will increase as fatigue sets in. To keep your effort steady, you will have to slow down somewhat toward the end of the run. This is not the most sensible way to use perceived effort to control running intensity, however. Instead, I suggest you use perceived effort to establish the appropriate intensity at the start of a workout or workout segment. Then, rely on pace or heart rate to maintain that intensity while allowing your perceived effort to gradually increase as fatigue sets in. This is not to say that you should ever completely ignore perceived effort when running. On the contrary, you must always allow perceived effort to have the final say in controlling the intensity of workouts. Even though perceived effort is all in your head, it tells you how your body is doing in a holistic way that pace and heart rate do not. Any factor that affects your body's capacity in a given moment will alter the relationship between mental effort and physical output in a way that you can perceive. For example, if the quality of your last night's sleep was poor, this might affect your body's capacity in today's run. It will take a greater than normal mental effort to produce a normal level of performance, and you'll feel it. Even if you aren't aware that you slept poorly, you'll just feel a little flat as you run. Every runner has occasional flat days in training. Often, these days come when you least expect them and have no apparent cause. But there's always a cause, whether it's identifiable or not. And this feeling of flatness is your brain's way of telling you that it has detected something amiss internally and that you shouldn't push yourself. On these days, you will experience unusually high effort at any given pace or heart rate. If you force yourself to stick to a pre-selected pace or heart rate target, you will probably end up feeling even worse the next day. In such circumstances, it's best to trust your brain more than you trust your GPS watch or your heart rate monitor, and slow down as much as necessary to keep your perceived effort where it should be. To get the most benefit from training by perceived effort, you need to quantify it. In Chapter 1, I mentioned that scientists use a tool called the Borg Scale of Perceived Exertion to gather ratings of perceived effort from participants in exercise studies. This 15-point scale is presented in Figure 6.1 in the bonus PDF. I prefer to use a modified 10-point scale of perceived effort that is easier to use in combination with heart rate and pace monitoring. This scale is presented in Figure 6.2 in the bonus PDF. The whole point of monitoring intensity in an 80-20 running program, remember, is to ensure that the program properly balances efforts at low, moderate, and high intensity. So the first thing we need to do with these scales of perceived effort is divide them into low, moderate, and high intensity ranges. There are actually multiple scientific definitions of these three ranges of intensity, but the differences among the competing definitions are small and of no practical consequence. Also in Chapter 1, I described a study done by Arizona State University researchers who defined moderate exercise as the range of intensities that fall between the ventilatory threshold, where the breathing rate abruptly increases, and the lactate threshold, where talking becomes uncomfortable. This is the definition of moderate intensity that I have used to formulate guidelines for monitoring and controlling the intensity of workouts in the 80-20 running system, not only by perceived effort, but by heart rate and pace as well. Clinical testing has shown that runners of all levels consistently rate their effort at or near 12 on Borg's 6 to 20 scale when they are working at the ventilatory threshold. This rating corresponds to a rating of 5 on the 1 to 10 scale that I prefer. At the slightly higher lactate threshold, runners consistently rate their effort between 13 and 14 on Borg's scale, which equates to a rating of just under 6 on the 1 to 10 scale. On the same scale, then, moderate intensity is represented by perceived effort ratings of 5 to 6, low intensity by ratings of 1 to 4, and high intensity by ratings of 7 to 10. Obeying the 80-20 rule, therefore, is a simple matter of keeping your perceived effort rating below 5 roughly 80% of the time. Getting the very most out of 80-20 running is a little more complicated, however. While a three-zone system of classifying exercise intensities is adequate for scientific purposes, it is not quite adequate for practical use in training. The reason is that low and high intensity ranges are rather broad. These broad ranges allow too much leeway to run either faster or slower than one should in certain types of workouts that demand fairly precise regulation of intensity. In the next section, I will describe a 5-zone system of measuring intensity by heart rate. Each of the 5 zones in this system corresponds to a 2-point range of perceived effort, so the two scales fit together nicely. In addition to allowing for more precise control of intensity during workouts, the 5-zone system offers a way of enhancing the reliability of perceived effort ratings. Runners who lack experience in rating their perceived effort tend to exhibit an initial tendency to underestimate their true intensity. Monitoring your heart rate with my 5-zone system will help you properly calibrate your effort ratings. For example, zone 4 corresponds to perceived effort ratings of 7 and 8. During workouts that call for efforts in zone 4, you can pay attention to how you feel while running within your zone 4 heart rate range to get a better sense of what perceived effort ratings of 7 and 8 really feel like. In the closing section of this chapter, I will present information that shows the correspondence between perceived effort, heart rate, and also pace in each of the 5 intensity zones. There is some interesting research indicating that estimated time to exhaustion is also a very good subjective indicator of objective running intensity. The idea is simple. You ask yourself, how long can I keep this up? And your answer tells you how hard you're working. The internal cues column of Table 6.2, found in the bonus PDF, provides information based on this concept that you may find helpful in the process of mastering my 1 to 10 scale of perceived effort. Heart rate. Every runner knows from experience that heart rate is a good indicator of exercise intensity. Even if you've never monitored your heart rate during a run, you know that your heart beats harder and faster as your speed increases because you can feel it. This link between the activity of the heart muscle and the activity of the skeletal muscles exists because the harder your skeletal muscles are working, the more oxygen they need, and the faster your heart is beating, the more oxygen-rich blood is circulated through the body. Like every other aspect of the act of running, the heart rate responds to running intensity is controlled by the brain. One part of the brain that is involved in such control is the insular cortex, whose role in fatigue awareness I mentioned in Chapter 4. The insular cortex monitors muscle activity and adjusts both the force and the rate of heart muscle contractions to meet the muscle's oxygen needs. Heart rate is only one among many physiological functions that vary in predictable ways alongside changes in exercise intensity. And it is no more definitive as a marker of intensity than is any other function. It's just easier to measure. Yet heart rate is connected to other physiological processes in ways that make it a particularly useful marker for overall exercise intensity. For example, research has shown that in fit runners, the muscles oxidize fat most rapidly at the heart rate that corresponds to the ventilatory threshold. You can't monitor fat burning in real time on your own when you run, but you can easily monitor your heart rate. So if you want to increase your muscle's ability to burn fat, all you have to do is strap on a heart rate monitor and run at your ventilatory threshold heart rate. The only catch is that each runner has a different ventilatory threshold heart rate and a different resting heart rate, maximum heart rate, lactate threshold heart rate, and so on. There are several factors that shape each runner's personal heart rate profile. The most important factors are body size, larger individuals tend to have lower resting heart rates, age, maximum heart rate tends to decline with age, aerobic fitness, fitter individuals are able to sustain higher heart rates for longer periods of time, and heredity, a number of genes influence resting heart rate, maximum heart rate, and innate aerobic fitness. Because each runner has a unique heart rate profile, effective heart rate-based training requires that target heart rate zones be individually customized. The lodestar for establishing custom heart rate training zones is the lactate threshold heart rate. In much the same way that identifying magnetic north allows a sailor to box the compass, identifying the lactate threshold heart rate enables a runner to define a complete set of custom heart rate training zones. In my five-zone scheme, the lactate threshold heart rate marks the upper limit of the moderate intensity range. Heart rates above this number represent high intensity. Heart rates below the ventilatory threshold, which again is just a step below the lactate threshold, represent low intensity. Exercise scientists determine the lactate threshold heart rate of individual runners by having them run at incrementally increasing speeds on a treadmill until the blood lactate concentration is 4 millimoles per liter. The heart rate at this point is by definition the runner's current lactate threshold heart rate. It's not quite as precise as it sounds, though. A runner who goes through this test 5 days in a row might get a slightly different result each time, because the body's physiological state changes from day to day. What's more, the 4 millimoles per liter standard itself is somewhat arbitrary. It is supposed to mark the exercise intensity at which the blood lactate concentration suddenly spikes, but for many runners, this magic number falls somewhat off the mark. Fortunately, it doesn't matter. Science has shown that runners get equally fit whether they exercise slightly above, precisely at, or slightly below the heart rate that is associated with a blood lactate concentration of 4 millimoles per liter in their designated moderate intensity workouts. In other words, close is good enough when it comes to determining the lactate threshold heart rate. And it so happens that it's possible to get close to the scientific standard for identifying the lactate threshold with do-it-yourself alternatives to lab-based testing. One alternative is a 30-minute time trial. Here's how it works. Warm up with several minutes of easy jogging, and then run as far as you can in 30 minutes while wearing your heart rate monitor. Your average heart rate during the last 10 minutes of this effort is your lactate threshold heart rate. The downside of this test is that it's rather painful. A less taxing option is to determine your lactate threshold heart rate by perceived effort. As I mentioned in the previous section, the lactate threshold heart rate corresponds to a rating of 6 on a 1 to 10 scale of perceived effort. So you can estimate your lactate threshold heart rate by starting a run at a perceived effort of 1 and then increasing your effort point by point until you give it a rating of 6. Your heart rate at this point is your lactate threshold heart rate. The downside of this test is that a little practice is needed to master the art of quantifying subjective effort. Another simple do-it-yourself method of determining the lactate threshold heart rate is the talk test. The lactate threshold heart rate is associated with the fastest running pace at which a runner is able to talk comfortably. While wearing a heart rate monitor, start jogging at a slow, steady pace. After 1 minute, recite the Pledge of Allegiance, refer to figure 6.3 in the bonus PDF, and note your heart rate. Alternatively, count upward from 120 to 125. Now increase your speed slightly. Wait a minute, recite the pledge or count again, and again note your heart rate. Continue in this fashion until talking is slightly uncomfortable. Note your pace at the previous speed when speaking was comfortable or sort of comfortable. Your heart rate at that pace is your current lactate threshold heart rate. Comfortable in this context does not mean that you are able to talk without feeling any sense of dyspnea or oxygen deficit, but the feeling should be quite mild. Here's a good rule of thumb. If your breathing returns to its pre-talking rhythm by the third breath after you finish speaking, then you are able to talk comfortably. Note that the smaller your speed increases are when you perform this test, the more precise the result will be. Once you've determined your lactate threshold heart rate, you can use it to calculate a full set of target heart rate training zones. Numerous heart rate training formulas exist, most of which are fairly similar to one another. As I mentioned in the previous section, the three-zone systems that scientists use are not adequately partitioned to meet the needs of runners training in the real world. So instead, I use a five-zone system that I developed for pair sports. Table 6.1 in the bonus PDF presents this system along with a specific example of target zones for a runner whose current lactate threshold heart rate falls at 160 beats per minute. It's easy to line up my 5-zone heart rate system and the scientist's 3-level hierarchy, as we've done already with respect to perceived effort ratings. Remember that I've chosen to define low intensity as the range of intensities that fall below the ventilatory threshold. Moderate intensity is the range of intensities between the ventilatory threshold and the lactate threshold, and high intensity is anything above the lactate threshold. The ventilatory threshold falls at the bottom end of zone 3, or 96% of lactate threshold heart rate. The lactate threshold is aligned with the top end of zone 3, or 100% of lactate threshold heart rate. That's your moderate intensity range. Zones 1 and 2, then, represent low intensity, and zones 4 and 5 are high intensity. By the way, the bottom end of zone 4, 102% of lactate threshold heart rate, aligns closely with the respiratory compensation point, which is where 80-20 advocates Stephen Saylor and Jonathan Esteve-Lanau position the dividing line between moderate and high intensity. So the high intensity range in my system matches theirs. You've probably already observed that the 5 zones are not perfectly contiguous. The top end of zone 2 is 89% of lactate threshold heart rate, and the bottom end of zone 3 is 96% of lactate threshold heart rate. This buffer exists to ensure that your low intensity efforts don't ride the fence between low and moderate intensity. On the other side, there's a small gap between the top end of zone 3 and the low end of zone 4. This gap exists because 101% of lactate threshold heart rate is just a bit too slow for the types of runs that are normally used to target zone 4. Each zone has its proper place in a runner's training. Zone 1 is appropriate for warm-ups, cool-downs, recovery periods between high-intensity intervals, and recovery runs. Zone 2 is targeted in what I call foundation runs, which most other coaches call easy runs, and long runs. Zone 3 is targeted in tempo runs, cruise intervals, and fast finish runs. A typical threshold run comprises a steady effort of 15 to 40 minutes in zone 3, sandwiched between a warm-up and a cool-down. Cruise intervals are like tempo runs, except the middle of the sandwich is separated into multiple shorter zone 3 efforts. A fast finish run is a foundation run with a short, 5 to 15 minutes, effort in zone 3 tacked on to the end. Zone 4 is typically targeted in high-intensity interval workouts featuring longer intervals, 2 to 8 minutes, and in fartlek, or what I call speed play runs, which are simply interval workouts with a less formal structure than are done on roads or trails instead of at the track. Zone 5 is appropriate for high-intensity runs featuring shorter intervals, 30 to 90 seconds, hill repetition runs, and more intense speed play runs. I will present detailed guidelines for performing all of these workout types in the next chapter. Note that your lactate threshold heart rate will change somewhat as your fitness level changes, rising slightly as you get fitter and dropping a bit if you should ever lose fitness. Therefore, it is necessary to repeat whichever test you use to determine your lactate threshold heart rate and recalculate your heart rate zones periodically to keep them current. You do not need to do this on any particular schedule, but only as often as you experience a noticeable change in your level of fitness. Heart rate monitoring is especially useful in low-intensity runs. The reason is that, unlike pace, heart rate is not a performance metric. Runners don't instinctively push to achieve higher heart rates that they can boast about, the way they often push to achieve faster split times. When runners are given a heart rate ceiling to stay below, they usually have no trouble respecting it. But when they are given a pace target, they often try to beat it. Many noteworthy runners have used a heart rate monitor primarily to hold themselves back. For example, Paula Radcliffe trained by heart rate in easy runs to keep herself from pushing too hard, but trained by pace and time on the track. Ryan Hall began to wear a heart rate monitor in 2013, the year after an ill-advised experiment with frequent high-intensity running resulted in a series of injuries. Heart rate monitoring is less useful in high-intensity runs. The reason has to do with a phenomenon called cardiac lag. When you speed up during a run, your heart will respond by increasing its contraction rate until it is sufficient to supply your muscles with the extra oxygen they're now asking for. This process is not instantaneous. Depending on how much your pace increases, it may take your heart 30 seconds or more to settle into a new rhythm. Cardiac lag has important implications for heart rate monitoring during workouts that include changes in pace. For example, suppose you are doing a run that features 6 intervals of 30 seconds in zone 5, with 2-minute recoveries in zone 1 between intervals. When you start the first interval, you will accelerate abruptly, and your heart rate will begin to climb. But chances are your heart rate will not actually reach zone 5 until the very end of the 30-second interval, if even then. That doesn't mean you fail to do the interval at the right intensity. As long as you are running fast enough that your heart rate would have reached zone 5 if you had continued at that pace, then you did it correctly. Likewise, when you slow down for recovery at the end of your first 30-second zone 5 interval, your heart rate will begin to decrease. But because of cardiac lag, no matter how much you slow down, your heart rate might not get all the way back down to zone 1 before your 2-minute recovery ends and it's time to start the next interval. Again, this doesn't mean you screwed up. As long as you jog slowly enough that your heart rate would have dropped down to zone 1 eventually, you did it correctly. To avoid getting tripped up by cardiac lag in workouts involving short efforts at high intensity, use perceived effort and pace as your primary intensity metrics in such workouts. Changes in perceived effort are instantaneous, and most running devices, with GPS or accelerometer technology, register changes in pace within a few seconds. When a given workout calls for a change from high intensity, zone 4 or 5, to low intensity, zone 1 or 2, or vice versa, target the appropriate perceived effort or pace as defined by table 6.2 in the bonus PDF. If the segment lasts long enough for your heart rate to eventually stabilize, you can then use heart rate to confirm that you're in the right zone. There's an app for that. The perceived effort-based method of determining lactate threshold heart rate is built into an 80/20 running smartphone app that I developed with Pear Sports. When you use it, you'll be guided through the test with audio cues. You'll actually hear my voice. The app also captures the lactate threshold automatically and uses it to calculate your 5 personal heart rate training zones. The workout itself is easy enough that you can repeat it the next day if you don't trust your initial result. All of these features make the app-based version of the perceived effort method more reliable than the low-tech version. Pace, which is calculated as time over distance, represents intensity in a way different from perceived effort and heart rate. Exercise intensity is essentially an input. It is how much physiological effort the body is putting into running. Perceived effort and heart rate are direct indicators of physiological effort. Pace, on the other hand, measures the performance output of that input. This makes pace a reliable indicator of intensity, because there is a direct relationship between how much the body puts into running and the resulting performance output. If you're running faster, it can only be because your body is working harder. As a performance metric, pace matters more than do other indicators of intensity in a crucial sense. When you compete, your pace determines your finish time, and your finish time is the basis for assessing your performance. Heart rates are not included in official race results. No awards are given for the greatest perceived effort. The basic relevance of pace to performance makes it a great way to measure progress in training. If your average pace or your split times in particular types of workouts improve as the weeks go by, you know your training is going well. If these numbers don't improve, you know something is wrong. The fact that runners care about pace more than they do about perceived effort ratings and heart rates imbues it with the power to motivate in a way that other intensity metrics do not. When runners are on the clock, they try harder. While it's possible in principle to try hard without wearing a watch, research shows that runners seldom try as hard when running entirely by feel. For example, a 2010 study conducted by researchers at New Zealand's Massey University found that runners completed a 6K time trial 6% faster with performance feedback than they did without it. Seldom, if ever, should you try as hard in workouts as you do in races. Treating workouts like races is a recipe for burnout. But in periods of race-focused training, you should engage in challenging workouts targeting zones 4 and 5 high intensity once or twice per week. If you monitor your pace in these workouts, you will tend to put a little more effort into them and consequently get a little more benefit out of them. The trick is to push yourself without pushing too hard in these faster runs. The best way to strike this balance is to aim to slightly improve your performance in benchmark workouts as the training process unfolds, instead of aiming to achieve your best possible performance in each of them as you would do in a race. Suppose, for example, that your training plan for an upcoming 10K race includes 3 workouts featuring 3-minute intervals in zone 4. The first time you do this workout, forget about performance and use perceived effort to monitor and control your intensity, aiming for a rating of 7 to 8 on my 10-point scale. But even though you are not thinking in terms of performance, go ahead and wear a speed and distance device during the workout and record your average pace for the intervals. When you repeat the workout, use pace as your primary intensity metric, aiming to run each 3-minute interval a second or two per mile faster than you did in the previous workout. Even though you will run less than a mile in each interval, your pace will still be measured in minutes and seconds per mile. Since your fitness is improving, your perceived effort should be about the same as it was in the previous session, despite the fact that you're running a little faster. When you do the workout a third time, aim again to improve your times, but only very slightly, so that the session doesn't take more out of you than it should. It's important that you complete even your toughest workouts feeling as though you could have run a bit faster or gone a tad further. When one of your flat days happens to coincide with a high-intensity workout, allow perceived effort to have the final say and give up your aim of improving your performance for the sake of completing the workout feeling you could have done more. In addition to being more performance-relevant than heart rate, pace is free of the lag phenomenon that limits the usefulness of heart rate monitoring in high-intensity workouts featuring short intervals in zone 4 or 5. So there are really 2 reasons why pace is the best choice for use as the primary gauge of intensity in high-intensity workouts. In low-intensity workouts, zones 1 and 2, pace should not be your primary intensity metric. Runners more often derail their progress by consistently running too fast in low-intensity workouts than they do by occasionally running too fast in moderate and high-intensity workouts. It is natural for runners to want their pace to compare favorably against their normal pace in all kinds of workouts, even easy runs. This disposition seduces runners into pushing a little harder in runs where they should not push themselves than they would if they were not paying attention to the clock. A single lapse of this type does little harm, but a consistent habit of pressing the pace in designated low-intensity runs hampers progress by creating a burden of fatigue that is carried throughout the training process and lowers performance in the workouts that are intended to be more challenging. Establishing individualized target pace zones for different types of workouts, including easy runs, offers a way of avoiding this problem, but it only works if those zones are respected. As I stated earlier, it's been my observation that runners have a harder time obeying speed limits in low-intensity runs than they do heart rate limits. What about moderate intensity, zone 3, runs? In the various types of workouts in which moderate intensity is targeted, the Zone 3 efforts last long enough that cardiac lag is not an issue. Monitoring your heart rate during moderate intensity runs will help you avoid pushing too hard, as it does in low intensity runs. But moderate intensity runs often are meant to be challenging, and monitoring your pace in them will motivate you to meet that challenge, as it does in high intensity runs. So I suggest you use both heart rate and pace to regulate intensity in moderate intensity runs, while using perceived effort to find the right intensity at the start of each Zone 3 effort, aiming for a rating of 5 to 6, and to make any necessary adjustments as you go, like slowing you down if you're having a flat day. In order to use heart rate monitoring and pace monitoring interchangeably in moderate intensity runs, you will need to have a set of 5 custom pace zones that line up with your 5 target heart rate zones. You can easily define these pace zones by essentially backing into them through your heart rate zones. Here's how. Once you've established your heart rate zones, complete another test workout to establish matching pace zones. To do this test, you will need a device such as the Polar RS300X that is capable of measuring both heart rate and pace. Be sure to conduct this workout on flat terrain. Begin by jogging very slowly for 5 minutes. Next, adjust your effort until your heart rate settles into a steady rhythm at the top of your Zone 1 heart rate range. Note your pace. Now increase your effort very slightly until your heart rate is at the bottom of your Zone 2 range. This will be no more than 2 BPM higher. Again, note your pace. Continue in this fashion until your heart rate reaches the bottom end of your Zone 5 range, and note the corresponding pace one last time. You now have a full set of pace zones to complement your heart rate zones. I recognize that many runners are resistant to wearing a heart rate monitor while running and much prefer to train entirely by pace. Either they find the chest strap that most heart rate monitors come with uncomfortable, or they have some other objection. While I've made it clear that I believe heart rate monitoring is a better way of regulating intensity in low intensity runs, I concede that a runner can practice 80-20 running correctly without heart rate monitoring if she respects her Zone 1 and Zone 2 pace ranges. But runners who choose to eschew heart rate monitoring must come up with their 5 custom pace zones through a different method than the one I've just described. Obviously, you can't back into pace zones from pre-existing heart rate zones if you've never established heart rate zones. There are many pace-based training systems that prescribe individualized target pace zones for runners based on some measure of their current running ability, such as a recent race time. My favorite among them is the one developed by Greg McMillan, which you can find on his website at mcmillanrunning.com. To use it, enter a recent race time or a goal time for a race of any distance between 800 meters and a marathon, or just use an estimate of the time you would run for a race of a certain distance today, and press submit. The calculator will immediately spit out specific pace targets for every conceivable type of run. Let's say your most recent race was a 10K, which you completed in 41 minutes 33 seconds, 6 minutes 41 seconds per mile. If you use this performance as your input, McMillan's calculator will recommend that you do your recovery jogs at 8 minutes 36 seconds to 9 minutes 17 seconds per mile, your easy runs at 7 minutes 31 seconds to 8 minutes 31 seconds per mile, your tempo runs at 6 minutes 41 seconds to 6 minutes 58 seconds per mile, your speed intervals at distance-specific time ranges of 1 minute 26 seconds to 1 minute 31 seconds for 400 meters, up to 6 minutes 24 seconds to 6 minutes 35 seconds for 1600 meters, and your sprint intervals at distance-specific time ranges of 18 to 20 seconds for 100 meters, up to 2 minutes 3 seconds to 2 minutes 12 seconds for 600 meters. It is not difficult to organize these results in a way that lines up with the perceived effort and heart rate training zones I described earlier in the chapter. Table 6.2 in the bonus PDF shows how both McMillan's pace guidelines and heart rate-derived pace guidelines line up with heart rate and perceived effort in my 5-zone intensity system. Note that McMillan's pace guidelines for high-intensity intervals are all distance-based, whereas some coaches and training plans use time-based workouts. Most of the workouts you will find in the next chapter, in fact, are time-based. To perform time-based high-intensity workouts with Greg McMillan's pace guidelines, you will need to convert his suggested times for intervals of specific distances into a pace in minutes and seconds per mile. For example, suppose a certain workout features 3-minute intervals in Zone 4. According to Table 6.2 in the bonus PDF, Zone 4 intervals are to be performed at McMillan's speed pace for 1,000-meter or 1,200-meter intervals. Which of these two options you select should depend on whether you are likely to run closer to 1,000 meters or 1,200 meters in 3 minutes at Zone 4 intensity. For most runners, it will be 1,000 meters. If this is true for you, find the recommended times for 1,000-meter intervals that are associated with the race time you've used as input to McMillan's calculator. Let's go back to our earlier example of a 41-minute, 33-second 10K. The 1,000-meter interval time range that corresponds to this race time is 3 minutes 48 seconds to 4 minutes 1 second. Now, convert these times into mile-based paces. 1 mile is roughly 1,610 meters, so you'll need to inflate these times by 1.61. This calculation yields a target pace range of 6 minutes 7 seconds to 6 minutes 27 seconds per mile for your 3-minute Zone 4 interval. As your fitness level changes, you will need to recalculate your pace zones, regardless of which method you used to calculate them in the first place, to keep them current. Each time you update your heart rate zones, repeat the process of determining the pace ranges that correspond with these zones. If you use Greg McMillan's pace guidelines, recalculate your pace zones after each race, using your latest finish time as the new input. Naturally, hills affect the relationship between pace and intensity. A pace of 7 minutes 9 seconds per mile on level ground corresponds to a lower intensity than does the same pace on a hill with a 5% gradient. Heart rate is a more useful metric for monitoring and controlling intensity on hills because a heart rate of, say, 136 beats per minute represents the same physiological intensity whether you're running uphill, downhill, or on level ground. Due to cardiac lag, however, heart rate monitoring itself is not helpful when you are running short uphill intervals at high intensity. In this case, it's best to use perceived effort as your primary intensity metric while also paying attention to your time to complete each hill interval. Aim to match or slightly improve those times when you repeat the workout. Combining perceived effort, heart rate, and pace. I've given you a lot of information in this chapter. If it all seems overwhelming at this point, relax. My guidelines for monitoring and controlling intensity by perceived effort, heart rate, and pace can be summarized in a few key points. Here they are. Start by doing either a 30-minute time trial, a perceived effort-based test workout, or a talk test workout to determine your lactate threshold heart rate. Then calculate your 5 heart rate training zones using the percentages in Table 6.1, which is found in the bonus PDF. Use one of these same workouts to calibrate your perceived effort ratings, anchoring your lactate threshold intensity to a perceived effort of 6 on a 1 to 10 scale. Determine target pace ranges that correspond to your 5 heart rate zones either by finding the pace that corresponds with the heart rate marking the low end and high end of each zone, or by using the McMillan calculator. Use perceived effort to establish your initial intensity whenever a workout calls for a change in intensity. Use heart rate as your primary intensity metric in all low-intensity runs, zones 1 and 2. Use both heart rate and pace to regulate intensity when running at moderate intensity, Zone 3. If you prefer not to train with a heart rate monitor, you may use pace to regulate your intensity whenever you would otherwise use heart rate, basing your target zones on Greg McMillan's pace guidelines. But if you do this, it is imperative that you stay within those zones at all times, especially in low-intensity runs. Use pace as your primary intensity metric when running at high intensity, Zones 4 and 5. except when running uphill, in which case you should rely on perceived effort. Use perceived effort to fine-tune your intensity during your most challenging workouts. Specifically, use it to ensure you finish all such runs feeling you could have run at least a little faster or farther. Use perceived effort to adjust your intensity on flat days. Specifically, when you feel worse than normal at a given target heart rate or pace, slow down. In the bonus PDF, you will find an appendix with further instructions for intensity regulation that are specific to each type of workout, from basic recovery runs to multi-zone mixed interval runs. Treat your first attempt or two at applying these instructions in each workout type as practice. If you forget your zone 3 pace range or are a little unsure of your perceived effort ratings, chalk it up to experience and move on. You'll get it right on your next try.